Hello, future certified personal trainer. My name is Eddie Lester, and I'm here with At Fitness Mentors to take you through Chapter 3, the cardiorespiratory system from the National Academy of Sports Medicine's Essentials of Personal Fitness Training. So let's go ahead and get started on slide 1. Slide 1 just intros the Chapter 3, which is the cardiorespiratory system. So let's click over to slide 2. Following this presentation, the participant will be able to describe the structure and function of the cardiovascular system and the respiratory system. So the cardiorespiratory system specifically is going to be referring to these two systems, and when you put them in conjunction, it just refers to the ability of the body to transport nutrients from in the blood and also absorb oxygen from the respiratory system. But to further the objectives, we're going to explain how each of the system relates to human movement, learn about oxygen testing procedures, and relate how oxygen is related to energy expenditure as well as the influence that dysfunctional breathing can have on the human movement system. So let's click over to slide 3. To further define the cardiorespiratory system, to maintain a constant state of efficient operation, the human movement system needs to have support systems. The cardiorespiratory system comprises the cardiovascular and respiratory systems, and together they provide the tissues of the human movement system, or HMS, with oxygen, nutrients, protective agents, and a means to remove waste. So specifically, when we talk about the cardiovascular system, we're referring to the heart, the blood, and blood vessels. When we refer to the respiratory system, we're referring to the lungs and the different portions of the lungs. And specifically, though, the respiratory system works to introduce oxygen into our blood. So let's click over to slide 4. Like I said earlier, the cardiovascular system is made up of the heart, blood, and blood vessels. Does anyone know what the two main blood vessels are? Well, let's find out. Let's click over to slide 5. The muscular pump that rhythmically contracts to push the blood throughout the body is the heart. The muscle of the heart is termed cardiac muscle and has characteristics similar to skeletal muscle. Cardiac muscle contraction is involuntary, meaning that you do not control your heartbeat. If you did control your heartbeat, you'd have to walk around every other second and be like, beat, 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 beat. But luckily we have an internal rhythmic system that allows the heart to contract on its own or involuntarily. So moving over to slide 6, the cardiac muscular muscle contraction. Cardiac muscle fibers are shorter and more tightly connected. This enables the contraction of one fiber to stimulate the others to contract synchronously. So what's great about the heart muscle is that if one fiber contracts, the entire heart gets that same signal and contracts as well. So there's never like an odd amount of firing in the sense that some fibers do contract and other fibers don't. Since they're all basically connected in a sense that would allow them to be stimulated at the same time. So all cardiac muscle fibers have a built-in contraction rhythm, and the fibers with the highest rhythm determine the heartbeat or heart rate. The typical discharge rate or heart rate is 70 to 80 beats per minute. So cardiac muscle contraction, there's a specialized conduction system of cardiac muscle that provides the rhythm for the heart and heart rate. Specifically, we have to talk about the sinoatrial node, or the SA node, and the AV node. It's important that we have kind of a signal delay in the heart, and this is where you get the term lub-dub, or two beats of the heart. It's like boom-boom, boom-boom, or lub-dub, lub-dub. Those two specific beats are extremely important, and the delay, or the two heart beats, come from the AV node delaying the impulse before moving on to the ventricles. So you need the atria to contract, which are the two superior chambers of the heart. You need those to contract before the ventricles contract in order to keep blood flow going in one direction. If the heart was to completely contract all at once, like squeezing an orange, blood would go in all different directions, whether it be in or out, and that's not what you want, because then you would have blood flow going backwards in the heart. So luckily we have two different contractions, which is atrial contraction and ventricular contraction. And that is due to a delay, once again, in the AV node. The SA node is going to be the pacemaker of the heart. And specifically what that means is that it's going to set the pace in which the heart beats. All right, moving on to slide 8. We have the structure of the heart. The heart is going to be composed of four chambers that form two interdependent but separate pumps. Each side of the heart has two chambers, Once again, the atrium are the superior chambers, and the ventricles are the inferior chambers, or the lower chambers. The atrium, or atria, gather blood coming to the heart from the veins. Ventricles pump blood out to the rest of the body. And specifically when we talk about the right side of the heart to the left side of the heart, the right side of the heart is responsible for collecting the blood and then pumping it to the lungs. And it needs to visit, or blood needs to visit the lungs in order to recapture oxygen in it or become reoxygenated. Once you have the blood that's reoxygenated, it returns to the heart and moves to the left side of the heart, in which the left side of the heart, or the left ventricle, is going to pump blood to the entire body. Moving on to slide 9, we're going to talk about the function of the heart. Each contraction of a ventricle pushes blood from the heart into the body. And remember, we have two ventricles. We have the right ventricle and we have the left ventricle. The right ventricle is going to pump blood to the pulmonary circuit, and the left ventricle is going to pump blood to the systemic circuit. The pulmonary circuit is going to be the lungs, the small circuit that pushes blood to the lungs and returns from the lungs. And then the systemic circuit is going to be the rest of the body, from the bottom of your pinky toe all the way up to the top of your head. And the second bullet point talks about the amount of blood that is pumped out with each contraction of a ventricle is called the stroke volume. And the stroke volume is going to be important to know with the heart rate, as it is equal to cardiac output. So let's go over stroke volume one more time. Stroke volume is going to be the left ventricle, all the possible blood that it forces out during each contraction is going to be known as the stroke volume. And then we also have something called the heart rate, and that's the rhythm by which the heart pumps blood, and that's measured in beats per minute. So the typical discharge rate of the heart, or beat rate, heart rate, is going to be measured in beats per minute, and that's going to be approximately 70 in males and 75 in females. So, but together these two items make up something called cardiac output, and this is going to be important to know for the test. And what cardiac output is the rate of the heart and the stroke volume together. So with each beat of the heart, you have a volume of blood that is ejected. And that's what cardiac output is going to be, the total output of the heart over 1 minute's time. So let's say we have a stroke volume of 100 milliliters. If we had 60 beats per minute, that's 60 times 100. And that's going to be equal to 600 milliliters per minute, which would be the cardiac output. And that is a close estimate to about what the heart pumps out. So moving on to slide 10, monitoring heart rate, it's important to understand how we measure the heart rate, as it is a part of an assessment within the personal training world. And to do so, you place an index and middle finger on the back side of the wrist, and specifically the thumb side of the wrist. And you can measure it in either side, and it's about the same in either side. Sometimes on females, it is a little bit harder if they do not have a strong pulse to feel there, so you may have to go to the carotid artery, which is going to be up by the neck. So the second bullet point says to locate the artery by feeling for the pulse with the index finger and middle fingers. What you want to do to measure the heart rate is apply gentle pressure to feel that radial pulse. So the wrist pulse is going to be called the radial pulse, and that's because it runs right along the radius, which is a bone in the forearm, and that's why you would call it the radial pulse. So the third bullet point talks about when measuring the pulse during rest, you count the number of beats in 60 seconds. And the best time to measure someone's resting heart rate is going to be right after you wake up in the morning. And that's because you haven't done any activity, your mind is relatively calm, you aren't thinking about too much. And if you measure it right when you wake up, it's going to typically be at its lowest point, which will accurately measure your resting heart rate. But also when measuring, you can only count the number of beats in 6 seconds, and you can multiply it by 10, because 6 times 10 is the total of 60 seconds. That's when you're doing exercise in the sense of like someone's running on the treadmill, you can quickly get an idea of where their pulse is at by putting your fingers on that radial pulse and counting to 6 and seeing how many beats are in that 6 seconds. For instance, if there's 17, or the example at the bottom says, if there's 17 beats in that 6 seconds, all you're going to do is you're going to add a 0 to multiply it by 10, and you're going to be right around 170 beats per minute. So let's move on to slide 11. Blood. Blood acts as the medium to deliver and collect essential products to and from the body's tissue or tissues. And specifically, some of those essential products are going to be oxygen or removing carbon dioxide from the cells. You're going to have platelets, antigens, and specifically, you're going to have the removal of waste products too. So the average human body holds about 5 liters of blood at any given time. And blood is a vital support mechanism, and specifically the functions of blood are going to be to transport oxygen, hormones, and nutrients to specific tissues and collect waste products, regulate body temperature and pH, and pH is going to be the acidity of your blood, which is a very specific number, and specifically your pH levels in the blood need to be anywhere from 7.35 to 7.45 to be efficient. And the third bullet point talks about it protects from injury and blood loss through its clotting mechanisms to seal off damaged tissue, like the formation of a scab. And the fourth one is to provide specialized immune cells to fight against the foreign toxins within the body, decreasing disease and sickness. Moving on to slide 12, we have blood vessels. And earlier we were talking about the different blood vessels of the heart. There's two main ones which are going to be arteries and veins. But we also need to know that there's smaller arteries and then there's smaller veins, and how do you get from the arteries to the veins? So let's talk about that. Blood vessels form a closed circuit of hollow tubes that allow blood to be transported to and from the heart, meaning it's a one continuous circuit. And for systemic blood circulation, blood flows through in this order. Okay, so we have arteries that transport blood away from the heart. The largest artery in the body is going to be called the aorta. And once you get down the systemic circuit to where the tissue needs to be, or where the tissue needs to be oxygenated, you're going to break off into first smaller arteries called arterioles, which is going to be important to know for the test. And then after arterioles, where the gas and the gas exchange occurs and nutrient exchange occurs is at the capillaries. And what collects the blood from the capillaries is going to be called the venules, which are actually smaller veins. And then that moves into larger actual veins, which transport blood back to the heart. The largest vein in the body is going to be the vena cava, or the superior and inferior vena cava, which lead right directly into the right atrium. All right, moving on to slide 13. We're now going to get into the respiratory system. The second functional component of the cardiorespiratory system is the respiratory system. Its primary role is to ensure proper cellular functioning by working intimately with the cardiovascular system to collect oxygen from the environment and transport it into the bloodstream. Moving to slide 14, the collection and transportation of oxygen is made possible by the respiratory pump and respiratory airways. So the picture on the right shows a little bit about the respiratory airways, and specifically respiratory airways start off in the oral cavity and the nasal cavity and move down through the trachea into the bronchi of the lungs. So moving on to slide 15, we have the respiratory pump. This is located in the thoracic cavity, and what this is basically it's a framework around the lungs that's flexible and allows for the expansion and compression needed for breathing, or needing for ventilation. That's another word for breathing. And it's divided into two phases: inspiration, or breathing in, inhalation, and expiration, or expiratory phase, which is exhalation, breathing out. Moving to slide 16, the respiratory pump is composed of bones such as the sternum, ribs, and the vertebrae, and also muscles. And it is important through other certifications and just as a personal trainer to understand that the muscles during inspiration are going to be the diaphragm. That's your main mover. That's like the balloon experiment that everyone did in elementary school, in which you pull the balloon and it inflates, or you pull the rubber casing and the balloon in the middle inflates like the lungs. And the external intercostals, scalene, sternocleidomastoid, and pectoralis minor. The reason why it's important to understand the inspiratory muscles for the respiratory pump is that during exercise, you get a decent amount of use in the scalene, and sternocleidomastoid, which those are located in your neck. And if you are stressed or you overexercise, you can lead to sort of an elevation in the shoulders, which can lead to like an uptight look or a upper rounded shoulder, sort of upper cross syndrome, which is poor posture. And the expiratory phase, or expiration, is done by your abdominals and your internal intercostals. So moving on to slide 17 in the respiratory passageways, air must have passageways to funnel in and out of the lungs for proper utilization. Respiratory passageways are divided into the two different locations, which is going to be conduction passageways and respiratory passageways. So the picture on the right just shows a little bit more detail into the respiratory passageways. The conduction passageways are going to be up near the oral cavity, nasal cavity, and trachea, and the respiratory passageway is going to be more as you get smaller into the primary bronchi, followed by the secondary bronchi, and then the tertiary bronchi, and then when you get into the alveoli or alveoli. And moving on to slide 18, we talk specifically about the conduction passageways. The nasal cavity, oral cavity, pharynx, larynx, trachea, and the right and left primary or right and left pulmonary bronchi are going to be the conduction passageways. And the respiratory passageways are mainly going to be the alveoli and the alveolar sacs. Where the alveolar sacs is where the oxygen oxygen exchange and carbon dioxide exchange actually occurs. So, moving on to slide 19, you have cardiorespiratory function. Cardiovascular and cardiorespiratory systems make up the cardiorespiratory system. Yeah, obviously cardiovascular and respiratory, cardiorespiratory, we talked about that earlier. And respiratory system provides the means to gather oxygen from the environment and transport it or transfer it into the body. The cardiovascular system provides the means to transport oxygen to the tissues of the body via the cardiovascular system. All right, next we have oxygen consumption. Oxygen consumption is going to be the uses of oxygen by the body. And specifically, it's going to be about 3.5 milliliters per kilogram per minute. And this is going to be known as 1 MET, M-E-T, capital. And it's basically 1 metabolic equivalent. So what that means is that your body at rest consumes approximately 3.5 milliliters of oxygen per kilogram per minute. And as you increase exercise intensity, you can measure the total oxygen consumption, which is going to be known as the maximum oxygen consumption is going to be known as your VO2 max. And this is going to be the best way that you can tell how good of shape someone is in cardiorespiratorily. And there's different estimated tests in which you can use as a personal trainer to determine someone's VO2 to see how great of shape they're in cardiorespiratorily or cardiovascularly. And specifically, that's going to be called the Rockport walk test. And we'll get into talking about that in chapter 6. But the last bullet point we talk about, used as in a fitness assessment, it can provide important structural and mechanical information that may help a fitness professional limit the risk of injury. And when it talks about structural and mechanical, you also can determine posture during movement, like a gait assessment or walking assessment, which is what the Rockport walk test is. So moving on to slide 21, or the next slide, we talk about dysfunctional breathing. Earlier I mentioned that the scalenes and sternocleidomastoid assist with breathing or secondary respiratory muscles. And the importance of all systems in the body working synergistically can be further demonstrated in the intimacy between the cardiorespiratory system and the human movement system. If there is a dysfunction in the cardiorespiratory system, this can directly impact the components of the human movement system and perpetuate into further dysfunction. Moving on to slide 22, alterations in breathing patterns are a prime example of this relationship of dysfunctional breathing. During shallow breathing patterns, like during stress, the secondary respiratory muscles are used more predominantly. If the shallow upper chest breathing pattern becomes habitual, it can cause overuse of muscles, including the scalenes, sternocleidomastoid, and levator scapulae, and upper trapezius. This would lead to sort of an elevated shoulders, rounded shoulders, hunched over look. And these muscles also play a major postural role in the kinetic chain, as they all connect directly to the head and to the neck. So during upper extremity movement, you might find that the shoulders might elevate. This could be due to the tightness in these muscles of the scalene, sternocleidomastoid, levator scapulae, and upper trapezius. And their increased activity and exercise tension often result in headaches, lightheadedness, and dizziness. So if your clients mention to you during the assessment that they have headaches or lightheadedness or dizziness, you can always check during the Rockport walk test to see if they have this upper cross syndrome or elevated shoulders look. So moving on to the final slide, just to kind of summarize things, the respiratory system gathers oxygen from the environment, inhales through the nose and mouth, and processes it to be delivered into the tissues of the body. As cells use oxygen, they produce carbon dioxide, which is transported back to the heart and lungs, and deoxygenated blood to be released through exhalation. That's why we breathe out more carbon dioxide than we breathe in. And the collection and transportation of oxygen is made possible by the respiratory pump and respiratory airways. And if there's a dysfunction in the cardiorespiratory system, it can directly impact the components of the human movement system and perpetuate into further dysfunction. So go ahead and finish up the audiobook lecture below, as well as the assignment and quiz for this chapter, and look forward to see you at the next chapter.